So, hello. Nice to be back. My name is Holger Geisler. I'm the managing director of marktforschung.de and Succeed GmbH, which organizes this trade show. The topic we will discuss now is about new approaches in consumer research. I'm looking forward to speak with my four participants. Virtual reality, micro surveys, prediction markets, applied neuroscience, biometric response, it all would be no problem to set up a dedicated hype cycle for the insights industry. But which methods are here to stay? And which trends, such as the metaverse, which is boosted by Facebook appearing on the horizon, will have a lasting impact on consumer research? Which megatrends will lead to new products and services in the market research industry? That's what we want to discuss today. With my international experts. So we have on the one side Pam Cusick. She's Senior Vice President at Rare Patient Voice. Rare Patient Voice is also on the trade show below. She's an experienced research professional with more than 30 years of expertise in study design, implementation, and analysis. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
We have Sam Sutlow here. He's a research veteran. I'm not sure, is it really like the, you say a research veteran, it sounds so... it's on your CV, so I was surprised. He says to himself he's a research veteran, having worked in the industry for 20 plus years. He began his career at RRI in Germany. I would say IRI, but I think it's RRI.
Information Resources.
Before moving into consumer and shopper research for a number of boutique qual-quant agencies. And before joining Premise, and Premise is also right next to the startup area below, before joining Premise to lead its commercial business in the UK in April 2021, Sam was a board member at Brandview. Welcome, Sam. And right next to Sam, we have Christian Dössel. He's Senior Vice President for Behaviorally, former known as PRS in vivo, is that right? Which quantitatively and qualitatively at the interface of consumer research and behavioral science on issues related to packaging, shopper behavior, and product experience. And Christian leads Behaviorally operations in Germany with offices in Hamburg and Frankfurt. Are you located in Frankfurt?
No, Hamburg.
In Hamburg, okay. And Behavior is also on the trade show. Where is your booth?
It's 103/2, so if you enter the hall, straight to the left, to the corner, then you will find us.
Okay, if you want to find Christian later, then you know where to go. And previously, Christian worked at Ipsos, Kantar, and TBWA, amongst others. And we have, last but not least, we have Dr. Steffen Schmidt. He's been with Link Institute from the Switzerland for almost 5 years, and he replaces Benedikt Lüthi, who unfortunately cannot attend today. Steffen is Director Marketing Science and HR Insights at Link, and Link is a part of YouGov Group since 2021. Hi, Steffen. And I would like to start with a little round of brainstorming. If each of you had to name exactly one new approach in consumer research, which approach would it be? And Pam, I would like to start with you.
Sure. So Rare Patient Voice really recruits patients and caregivers to participate in all types of research. So we see a lot of our clients come to us with all sorts of things. And one of the things that's very popular now are patient journeys, and not just interviews, patient journeys, but connecting patients, what they say in interviews, with their actual data. And in the U.S., some of the legislation has changed where you can actually do that more easily, whereas previously you couldn't. So we have a partner that we work with quite closely who is able to do that and connect. We'll have patients who come to us, you know, and they'll do interviews, and then they'll connect that data from their electronic health record to get a bigger, a more well-rounded picture of those patients, and that's quite new. And I don't know how much that's, you know, you can do that in other countries, but in the U.S. you can.
So this is your hot topic?
It's my hot topic.
Quite related. So, Kristin, is it the same with you that you have already focused on the hot topic that you name?
For us it's interesting to see what can we do with what we already have, right? And if you just see, okay, what do we have? And I recognize some faces who have attended my speech about AI, so I'm very much into that topic, to see how can we leverage any kind of data that we have, that everybody owns, when it comes to the vendors of research services or clients, how can we leverage this data in order to become quicker, more predictable, easier to deal with, and then AI comes as the first kind of thought to anybody's mind, and I think that's... To automize things in order to make predictions,
okay,
faster predictions, but then I think, but probably we can speak about it a bit later, then the next step will be how to make AI a bit more creative and not only to be predictive. That's really an interesting part.
Okay. So Sam, what is your hot topic that you see arising?
I think probably gamification.
Okay.
And I've chatted to a few people at the conference about that as well. And some of my
thoughts... What do you mean by gamification?
Well, so when it comes to kind of standard, obviously surveys have become, you know, what even whilst they have gone from
boring
paper
to
pen, telephone, okay, it's the same kind of survey.
Okay. Yeah.
And the gamification bit is to try and make it a little bit more fun. So that could be through either just collecting points and things like that. But what I've also seen is the way you phrase questions. Mm-hmm. So it might be if you were a CEO of so-and-so brand, what would you do with $1 million? Or how would you develop a new trainer and things like that? So often there can be more opinions that come through of people actually mm-hmm. thinking about it being in the shoes of the brand. Or there's other stuff. Some of the stuff we're doing at Premise is that we get people to go to different locations.
They get sort of challenges in them.
Yes,
so
we have
tasks.
Challenges. Yeah, yeah. So actually, can you visit 5 places today?
Yeah.
And then we have a map, and then people can go and do that. So actually, it's more than just getting a reward or getting a chance to win something. Actually, the gamification, and I think because so much has moved to mobiles now, people are expecting a lot more because mm-hmm. social media is such a rich environment.
Okay.
That
is one of your big
gamification
trends.
Gamification. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, gamification. Okay. Stefan, what is your hot topic that you see?
Yeah, I try to be smart and I was looking for the grid report.
Okay.
Because back in the days, the
me too.
This year, for some reason, they don't publish any kind of trend list or buzzword list.
Yeah.
So, and at the same time, I'm a scientist, even though I'm working in the business. And I don't like to have only one approach. Because, you know, like Maslow was quoting, if you only have a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So, and I would put it into a bigger picture. And last year, Philip Kotler, one of the godfathers of marketing, published a book called Marketing 5.0. I was quite happy about that because 1 year before, in 2020, I published something about Customer Insights 5.0. I thought maybe I'm a little bit too arrogant about that. But then I was happy when he was doing it at the same time. And
so he followed you.
Not really. But I can recommend to read it. And he says, we have now 5 pillars, okay, right, when it comes to intelligence, business intelligence. So we have the data-driven part and the agile part. Okay, this is one thing. And the new thing is more about we have the predictive intelligence, mm-hmm, right? So then I can think about approaches like causal AI, right? Mm-hmm. So it's coming up now, and it's featured in the hype cycle of Gartner as well. Then we have the contextual intelligence, mm-hmm, which brings really insights from people's real life, right? Because then I can think about solutions from I-Square in context testing, mm-hmm, working pretty nice. Now I'm really happy about that the development when it comes to mobile eye tracking is there. That
mm-hmm.
we can
so Oculit, something.
Oculit, for example, right? So we don't need to go into a lab with our participants. And then last part is the augmented intelligence. And there are great solutions from Neuroflash when I say, okay, is this slogan activating something or aim power, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have your creative style and you need a quick decision about that. I like that. So, but it's more about the components. So we have to play, or we have to consider and reflect every kind of components.
Okay, that's a perfect bridge, because the first topic I would like to discuss with you is AI-based testing, and Stefan already mentioned it. How do you rate approaches and tools in which the testing of commercials or communication materials is no longer done by humans, like we knew in the past, by a trained AI? Examples would be like AIM-powered brain suit or the Kantar Link AI. How do you see that trend to replace human people by AIs to test that? Christian, what is your point here?
I wouldn't say that it's the intention to replace. I probably would say it's the intention to complement.
Okay.
For certain circumstances, and everybody must be clear when to use AI and when not to use AI. So for me, it's not something which it will replace something, rather than to add any kind of benefits to at least our clients, right? Sometimes it really needs to go fast, and then probably it's good enough to use that AI. Sometimes it's not, and then you do your usual stuff, which you do anyway, right? So I would phrase it a bit, or frame it a bit like a complement to traditional.
Well, at the moment, it's more used in cases where you usually never did market research, but because when you have to test a lot of material, you probably don't use it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that that goes back to what I was saying in the introduction round. So really, I mean, trying to do something more with what we already have, because as we all know or should know, you need a lot of data in order to train an AI algorithm, right? And if you don't have that, then probably you shouldn't start to. I mean, you could out of interest, but then it becomes a bit weak, biased, and we all know the public or the kind of prominent examples like
garbage
the recruitment AI process from Amazon, which was very much disqualifying female applicants applications. Sorry, and there's a couple of more things around that.
Sam, do you already?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that probably the industry is lagging a little behind in terms of AI, but actually I think it's an opportunity to learn some of those examples where it's kind of gone wrong. And I think the application is there's multiple ways AI can be applied. I think there's obviously the analysis side, so everybody wants data quicker and there's larger data sets, so that's obviously good. I think the other thing is, some of the stuff I've been reading about and chatting about is where AI can help in the production of the research. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you pose a question and then there's a whole library of other questions and other surveys that have tackled that already and pushing that out. And so again, it's speed. And I think it's not putting us out of business. I think it's actually that next step to actually broaden what we're doing and get it faster and to make ever more sort of, you know, more important and faster decisions.
Okay. Stefan, you already pointed out on brain suit from how do you see a few? What do you like about that approach?
Well, I'm using quite a lot of AI solutions. And what I really like is about that at the end, it's not replacing somebody, right? So it's just another step for insights, and it makes you better and faster decision. Everybody says that, but it's real. So for example, this morning I got 10 new campaign motifs from my client, and when I go back today, this afternoon with train to Zurich, hopefully the internet connection will be stable, I'm going to analyze it, right? Because we need a solution on Monday morning. Monday morning for another survey, because now we have 10 motifs, it's a little bit too much for a survey, it costs too much money, but let's reduce it from 10 to 5. Mm-hmm. Perfect. And at the end, we should learn how to adapt it to the very own business at the end. So we have so many solutions like, I wrote an article, maybe you should read it, I recommended it. It will be published in a couple of weeks about this kind of question was demonstrated from getting data. Mm-hmm. And at the end, if you have an AI, we need to define the AI as well, because otherwise we have garbage in, garbage out, right? So we have another information which might be useless, right? And then another quote by Nicholas Nassim Taleb, if you try to keep somebody stupid, provide him information. And now I can see when it comes, for example, to content generation, right? I can create tons of content, but is it really activating people? I don't know. I'm pretty sure most of the time it's not, because it's only one of 10 maybe, right? And AI, but helps another AI. So we can create, for example, content by AI and use another AI solution to reflect, is it really triggering the right associations, et cetera, et cetera. So and it's a combination, and it's at the end, it's a human machine interaction, right? And we are more the curator as a marketeer or marketing researcher. we have to define at the end what goes in, what comes out, right? That, but it helps a lot.
Okay. Would you comment, or should we just jump to the next?
Okay.
Well, the next topic is virtual reality. That is not really new anymore, but we have the metaverse coming up. And to be honest, virtual reality is not a big thing in market research, at least in my perception. Now, Facebook is pushing the metaverse. There will be a lot of investment in that area. Will the metaverse become important for the insights industry, and which approaches could be transferred to the metaverse? Any idea?
I would ask the audio to the audience, who has a virtual reality glass? I see one, two. So we run a survey, and it might be in Switzerland 5 to 7%. So, and the next question I would ask: how many people have a Facebook account? I'm skeptical, to be
honest.
You're
skeptical?
Yeah, okay. Because at the end, at the same time, when it comes to new approaches, what kind of solution we would like to answer? Right, so we have a management problem to solve, right? It's not about like other topics. It's a new approach, but what kind of insights can we generate by metaverse? So I do have a virtual reality at home, but I don't use it since 6 months because I was depressed that my battery runs out after 2 hours. So I can watch a movie, but it's finished because my batteries run out. So I don't know about metaverse. It's a hype type for sure. Mm-hmm. I hope it might give us some insights when it comes to good feeling about something, but then I'm more optimistic when Apple glasses will come out in 2 years, that we have a real augmented reality, right? So yeah. I hope for Apple, not for Meta.
Will rare patient voice something like have some groups in the metaverse and that communicate there? Do you think that?
I don't know. I mean, it's mostly everything is either face to face or you know, connecting individually with the patients. There could be groups that clients want to do something like that with, but it's not. Again, it's more. I mean, for us,
it's not on the strategic list at the moment.
Yeah, we're connecting the patients with whatever the clients want to do. So if they start. If they want to do something like that and patients are interested, we're happy to connect them.
Okay.
But we haven't really seen that as something where clients are coming to us and saying, that's what we really want our patients to do.
And is it on a list for premise? Because you already have a large community
Should
you be there in the metaverse?
I think so. I mean, there's obviously, it's still in its infancy. It's very conceptual at the moment, but as we've been saying, Facebook are investing in it and, they are in the data business. Thinking about it, I think the probably online shopping, I think, could be one of the biggest transformations because you're actually immersed in an environment where you can interact with the brand and you can shop. And I think the data that you could collect around that could be very rich. Whether Premise will be investing in that, I don't know yet. But I think certainly as an industry, embracing these new things is always better. But thinking about the richness of the data of people, basically not just the humans interacting online as they do now, but actually in an immersed online environment means that this is why Facebook are doing it, everything is recorded. In fact, your movements, everything like that. Yeah. I think we'll wait and see, but I think it is exciting, if not a little bit daunting as well. So.
Okay.
I completely agree to what everybody was saying. I mean, it's really a top topic, or should be a top topic, to at least put your toe into that water and to see what's possible. I mean, for us, it should be a bit kind of relevant because when it comes to shopper kind of research, which we do, then obviously we could try to use it a bit with some shops that we build up. But then I must say it's not new news. I can do it somewhere else, right? And then it's protected, and I completely get your point when it comes to data protection and how to convince participants to do that, right? So, I mean, probably for observations, just to check behavior, but for that, it's probably a bit too early. And we don't know. I mean, I'm old enough
to remember Second Life.
To remember Second Life. I don't. And then, then it was. I mean, it's. I know about the differences between Metaverse and Second Life, but I mean, yes, the brands come in, and then another brands come in, and the Adidas shop on Second Life, and everybody was walking around. But then it died, right? So, so they really need to prove the relevance for business. And I think afterwards we will try to find some solutions how to facilitate the metaverse for as an industry for our purposes.
Okay. Well, we have something that is much more up to date and not in the horizon. It's Qual Mobile, already a trend. Participation in qualitative surveys forms via smartphone. So it's the corona pandemic established online and mobile quality approaches at the latest, so it's really here already. But is Qual Mobile something? Is it really a new trend, or just a matter of changing the device? What is your view on that?
I think for patients, it's really helpful. Especially rare patients who might be dispersed, kind of widely, and maybe not want to get out and into the public and be especially during COVID, connected with other people. Being able to do an interview online was really very helpful. And the device, I don't know that matters as much as the accessibility. If they have, an internet connection, if they're in a rural part of, say, the United States, they may not have that. But, oftentimes we have people going to libraries and so on just to be able to connect and be able to be involved because they really do want to participate and share. So I would say, I love face-to-face. I love, I think that's, a good thing for patients, but a lot of times they can't get there, and having those opportunities to do remote interviews and connect with other people through focus groups is really, phenomenal and a good thing for them.
Okay.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's not new. It's still a bit new, I would say, Holger, but I mean, for us, and it's just a part of the mix, I would say, right? So we have this mix of methodologies, so everybody should be aware of what to do when. But and then it also becomes a bit more complex because you have a second access of devices and how you do it, face-to-face, online, mobile, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, if you do, for example, shopper journey studies and you want to get some longitudinal behavioral data, then Qual Mobile is the way to go. So yeah. It's part of the mix already. So.
Yeah. I guess Sam for premise, it's already there, and you use that a lot
Yeah, I mean we're a mobile first app, so yeah. Everything's designed with the mobile in mind. I think there's something like 4 billion mobiles, smartphone users now. So the fact that there's so much technology in the phone obviously lends itself to being able to do much richer qual studies. I think also some of the stuff we've been doing is around ethnographic. Mm-hmm. Research, so show us makeup routines, how you're preparing food, things like that. And so people, and obviously the reach and the fact that you can get into people's homes, and also the fact that people are much more comfortable with filming and uploading and things like that because it's all part of kind of social media as well. So we've seen the reach being so much better, but not just numbers of people, but actually into their lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good, I think, stage we're at.
Okay. Initiatives from YouGov and Link in that direction?
Oh, we have a couple of ideas, of course. Actually, I'm not a qual guy, so yeah. Because I can't listen to people, I have a problem with that. So I can do that, but not longer than 5 minutes. That's a problem. But I see the advantage when you interview people in the moment of truth at the end. So that is for sure. Positive, and also to combine it with new techniques like voice research, for example, or mm-hmm. upload something, or again mobile eye tracking, right? This was been limitation before, even though for Quant, right? So, but now we have the solution, and yeah, mobile qual for sure for moment of truth interviews, including diaries, of course.
So again, we jump just over to the next topic. It's blurring boundaries between real life and market research. It's a topic that I found out in the when I prepared myself, because we have approaches like Rare Patient Voice, Premise. They use community-based approaches that seems to, in my perception, different from the traditional access panel-like approaches. more direct, more personalized interaction. We have something like challenges between the community provider like Premise and participants instead of just sending "we have a survey for you" notifications. Or we can think about the German startup EPAP, which uses cash register receipts to invite people to surveys in a much more targeted way. Is that something like more trend or something it just we have a few companies that do that?
I think, you know, the way that we identify and recruit patients is a bit different. We go to patient healthcare events and meet them in person and invite them to sign up, and we work through support and advocacy groups to connect with people who are real patients. And I think that's important because there is a lot of fraud in market research. So in order to prevent that, we have a lot of processes in place to, you know, when they sign up to check their IP addresses and working with Research Defender and so on. But the truth of the matter is, knowing who, going to the source where they're at a healthcare event and connecting with them directly and finding, through them connections to other people is really important. So I know for us, that won't go away. We can find people online, certainly, and do so through support and advocacy groups, but it's a different kind of thing. And then we build a community that, you know, is invested and wants to participate. They're not just a number. They're actually, you know, real people who they'll email us and we'll see them at events and they'll come back and kind of want to have that interaction. So as big as the world is, we're still connecting with them on a one-on-one basis, which is nice.
Yeah, which is different to what usually the online panel providers do.
Of course.
You agree, okay.
Right, and again, for us, part of that is the differentiation between just having patients with hemophilia or diabetes, and you think they have that, yeah. But we've actually gone to a hemophilia event or a diabetes event, and those are, we know that they're, you know, real legitimate patients. And the importance of that is when you're making decisions about a product, about a service that will impact human lives, you want to make sure you're basing that on real people and, you know, what they really need and, you know, what they've really experienced. And we can, you know, we can say with a good, you know, feeling that those are actually the people who we're providing to our clients. Yeah.
Is Premise something, do you consider Premise something like the next step in online panels, or is it something totally different?
I mean, it could be compared to a panel in the sense that there are people who've downloaded the app and they complete
participate
surveys
and participate. And, yeah.
But the kind of the pitch is the reason why people download it is because they can monetize either information that they've got or information or the world around them.
Which is not so different to usual panels.
Yeah, so, but it's all part of sort of earning money whilst they're shopping. So they might say, we might say, well, next time you go to the shop, we'd like you to go to this particular fixture and see if there's any products that are out of stock. And that's mm-hmm. because there's an end customer somewhere that wants to study availability. But the interesting thing is that they download it because they want to earn money, but actually, and this is my gamification point earlier, it starts to become a bit more part of the day-to-day life, which is, okay, they can get some money for doing it, but actually there's tasks and things to do. And it's probably because we're all addicted to our phones and they're just looking for something else to do. But so there's lots of potential for people to be finding information, but actually there's a lot of latent demand about people who are happy to provide information mm-hmm. as part of their day-to-day life. And it also is able to capture more in the moment as well, because mm-hmm. you know, what we want you to go there, what did you think about it? You know, did you find the product? What do you, you know, that kind of thing. So
yeah.
But the question about whether there's a blurring, I think it is an acceptable blurring
yeah.
of market research and day-to-day life.
Yeah. YouGov has a huge panel, we heard that. So how are there any ideas also because in that way to be?
Yeah, so I can speak for Link in particular because over the last 2 years we saw a change that we have the biggest or the largest panel in Switzerland with 115,000 people, and what we can see now is that our clients ask us if we can provide a subsample of that. So mm-hmm. it's community-like, it's not a real community, but the advantage is at the end we have a lot of information about them, so we don't need to ask them, pre-screen, etc. There's a real advantage, and so at the end we have a shorter time, and actually the engagement rate is way higher. So we can, instead of 2 days, we can run a study in 1 day. Perfect. So, and I mean, I'm happy about the topic of brand community. It was a hot topic in science 15 or 20 years ago. but there was not the technology really to have something like that.
And now so they are recruited in the YouGov panel for that brand community?
In the link panel, yes.
Oh, in the link panel, okay.
Yeah. I don't know for YouGov exactly, but for link I can say we have a subsample, let's say a client A, and he asks us, hey, can you provide us with 3,000 people?
This is not so new, but what is the new thing about?
The new thing about it at the end is that we can collect this kind of panel then actively to an agile platform like Quantilo.
Okay.
So and so that then really our clients can run a study within 24 hours.
Okay.
Even with our support or...
And they know that they are part of that brand community and there is dedicated...
No, they don't know that. No, it's not. That's what I said. It's not really a community. They don't know they are part of client A.
Okay.
But they are pre-screened and we treat them like they are a part of the community.
So they have much more better fitting
the most
topics about the
question. It's more about pre-screen for their own consumption. Right?
Yeah.
That's what I said when it comes to pre-screening. We don't need to ask them what kind of insurance do you have, telecommunication provider, et cetera, et cetera.
So
3 minutes save, that's a boring question at the beginning.
Okay.
Right? So, and we go directly to tools like... it's close to gamification. One of my favorite tools, MaxDiff Segmentation. It's quite easy to use, and we can generate easily based on a platform like Quantilo data for our clients, or the client is using it on their own.
Okay.
Depends on the skills and capabilities.
Okay. Behaviorally, do you have something, Christian?
Boundaries. No, I got a bit, not confused, but I mean, probably for us, since we are not into the patient thing and not into the panel thing, because we obviously don't have that, and a bit more broader, I would rather say, okay, I mean, there's always been a challenge and also be a request for recruiting people for our studies, right? And if you do it yourself with a community or an app-based kind of thing, then for sure that's a good thing. But if you go to a panel, then I assume at least that these are recruited somewhere from real life as well, right? So I hope. and so for me, it doesn't make a big difference. I see it coming when it comes to niche targets, for sure. So when I would like to have somebody who is suffering from a certain illness kind of person, or if we talk about B2B, right? Because then you really need to make sure that you try to find those people in real life, right? For small qual kind of sample sizes or for bigger quant size of sample sizes. And then my recommendation would be, okay, look everywhere, right? And I mean, we know services who are going into communities on social platforms, not owned by you, or by, but I mean, or to groups on Facebook just to see, okay, has anybody an interest? And obviously there's a lot of communication and you perfectly can target them, at least to make a first kind of approach and a first kind of attempt if they are able to qualify for a survey with all the quality measures in place. Yeah.
Okay. My last topic before we open the question round. Probability-based panels. We don't touch the topic quality so far, but there's an increasing discussion around the topic of data quality. It was also already yesterday there at sample frames. And while we have probabilistic online panels so far mainly existed in academia, at least in Germany it is so, and in the Netherlands, I don't know, in other countries. There are some interesting attempts to build probabilistic online panels that would allow representative studies for commercial use also by means of online surveys. Any views on that? Opinions?
I mean, I think it's, as you say, a lot of it's been used in social research, in academia.
Yeah.
I think, and I guess everybody, you know, data quality is one of the highest priorities. But I think my view of it is that obviously you can try and make a panel as representative as possible, but it really is down to the sampling, as in how you use that panel. So I would say that, yes, you can get a panel as statistically robust as possible, but you've obviously still got to do the right sampling, stratified, and things like that within it. So I would say that it kind of exists already. I think it's...
It exists already, but the thing is, at least in Germany, it is so that we have, I think two or three probabilistic online panels.
Yeah.
They're built by the University of Mannheim, and they really did a lot to have, 5,000 people recruited in a perfect way. and to draw representative samples, which is usually something that is quite different to what we see in online panels. So is it also a topic, because I know YouGov Link, you have large panels, and they, but they are, I don't know how the Link panel was built, but
So I'm in a luxury situation that the Link panel probably is the only one panel in the world which where we have recruited our participants or panelists actively. So there's no chance for nobody to go on a website and say, I would like to be a part of you. It's not possible, right? So I'm in a luxury situation when it comes to this kind of question and data quality. Of course, data quality is a problem. I don't know how really this kind of probabilistic statistic at the end is working within, with regard to the sample, right? But I only can say that back in my days, 15 years ago, when I was working quite a lot with probabilistic statistics, for example, to estimate what is the arrival time of an airplane, it's the same story at the end. We have some kind of data, we don't know how good they are, but it's at the end, it's the distribution we are using. And like back in my days, we were, have been quite precisely about that. So, and I hope that these kind of panels are have the same kind of quality at the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end, it's not yet it's a problem, but we see, for example, the younger the people, the more difficult is it to recruit them. Yeah? It's under,
it's just, it, it's a fact,
under 25. So last year, last week, I was at the Herofest in Switzerland. It's a gaming festival, and there I can't find these guys, these people, yeah? But not in my panel, right? So so I need to think about how to reach them. And at the end, it's some, especially in Germany, I can recognize that it's quite. We have two sides. One are using that and promoting the other. Like, no, we can't do that, right? So for sure, the truth is something in between. I mean, at the end, even with a good quality panel like our panel from Link, if you have the wrong methods, garbage in, garbage out, right? So we only talk about the panelist at the end, right?
Do you see a growing trend in that, or is it just Link has that and there was there will do you expect there will be more in Germany or in
I'm pretty sure there will be more. So there's a need for that, and we can see how this kind of companies are growing, right? So for sure, just based on the reflection what have been over the last 5 to 10 years, it's gonna work. Yeah. Okay. We need maybe some kind of other definition of data quality, but I'm pretty sure for a specific target group, in particular, it's going to work.
Okay. Pam, do you have a view on that, probabilistic online panels? Or not really your...
It's really not our, you know, we're so specific to patients and rare patients in particular. Yeah. So, you know, when we're looking at quality, it's really, you know, we're going to specific patient groups and knowing where they're coming from gives us, you know, lets
but
us
but
know
you already use... In some way, yeah, but so they are so niche, so hard to find. So okay.
Right. So then they're, you know, we have that sufficient confidence that they are who they're, you know, who they are supposed to be.
So, okay.
And maybe in this way, I forgot something, because is John here, John Palston? Because I remember his speech 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago in Frankfurt, and he was saying, you know, the problem with even good online panels, we have the bot problem. Sometimes even 60% of the answers are bot-related. And I can see it. I could see it back in the days in university as well, when I had, say the name of the panel, but I was confused that my very good measurement model, right, is not working. I said, what the fuck is going on here, right? Yeah.
And now I can't
publish my paper, right? Yeah. So, and then I was using another one, and it's working. I said, come on, there must be something like bot-related or people from, I don't know, where they are, have activated themselves to be part of that. So that's, even though for a good quality panel, right, so which have a good sample distribution, the bot problem is a risk, and almost nobody's aware about that. And John was putting it out 2 weeks ago, I think 2 weeks ago in Frankfurt. That's a point I would like to make.
Okay.
No, I would also definitely join what Stefan was saying when it comes to probably think about different measures, how to assess quality, right? I mean, what you're mentioning, probability is one, and I buy it, and I'm completely behind that. But then it is about usually, what we do, we have segments, right? Certain segments which we will use and which we will try to include in our service, right? And sometimes they are kind of niche, and I very much appreciate all the initiatives and also some guys walking around with very kind of, when it comes to, what is the word for that? For example, sexual orientation, okay. religious orientation, which might or might not be under overrepresented in kind of service, and the same goes to race, etc., etc. And that's something which I really appreciate. And if somebody puts that into a big panel to make it even more representative for any kind of population, then that's fine, and we all should support that. But for us, the really commercial kind of benefit is, okay, I need the right segments in order to answer right questions from our our end clients. Right.
Okay, so we will open the discussion. Are there any questions from the audience already? Oh yeah, okay, please. Please wait, we have a microphone. At least we had yesterday a microphone. Just give me a second.
I wanted to ask what you think is the reason that young people are the hardest to recruit for online panels, because usually we are more online than anyone else. So it should, in my eyes, I thought it would be easier to recruit younger people because we are more willing to give our data away to other people and we are easier to reach. So what's the reason behind that?
Please,
Bob. Probably briefly, I'll just say, I think it's probably fighting for screen time, as in competing with other things. I mean, that, you know, young people are online, but they're on multiple apps. I think the other thing is, it's a bit odd, isn't it, that the younger are more likely to be able to have their data passively collected and seem to be able to trust that more than maybe something where they've actually opted in. So I don't know the answer, but I think those are some of the causes.
Yeah. But there could also be something like, okay, are we really sure that how we ask questions, the way younger people or younger kind of generations are eager to answer that, let's say, boring kind of service, which we only expose on a mobile device, and then if we then probably it's not so interesting. And
just it's only about the question.
And this is a topic of better reputation as well for marketing research. Yeah. Right, so most people are bored about being asked.
I don't think that people really realize something like, I don't know if people on your community would say we do market research, or people at Opinio would say we do market research. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but when it comes to young people, for sure, people. I mean, I can see it my students, right? So when I give my course about that, and after 2 days say, oh, this can be marketing research. I say, yeah, hopefully it is in the future, or maybe, of course, in the present. But back in the days, we interviewed people for 20 minutes, for 10 minutes, even though boring question we don't understand, right? So, and this is one reason, and otherwise, the other reason, of course, online is so big. So how many websites you would like to collect the data from those to reach them, right? That's another topic. But I'm, as well, again, I'm optimistic that we will find a solution for the future. We must find a solution as an industry for this problem.
I have a little different perspective. I think that young people are engaged, and we see that, you know, with our community. I think they're engaged when it's something they care about. So you can find those people, again, you know, a person with a particular condition really wants to be engaged. They want to share their experience. They want to be involved because they want to be able to make things better. They may not care as much about a product or Tic Tacs, and providing their input about that. So maybe that's where we're having, it's not, there has to be a more unique and fun way to get them to provide their input about Tic Tacs, because if it's something they care about, they'll tell you.
But when Tic Tac would like to know somebody about this,
right, I'm sure they would like to know. They have to find a better way, right? A better way to ask the questions are not so boring or connecting it with something that they do care about. Sure. Because I also find that younger people are quite interested in things that give back, that make make the world a better place, and so if you can connect what you're doing to something that's meaningful to them, you might be able to
so
get
not
them.
Only money as incentive.
Not only money, but are you donating to a good cause? Are you a company that does good things? There's a whole bigger picture to what younger people care about than what, I don't think I probably would have asked those questions, or wondered about that about a company, but now I do, because my kids do. So.
Any more? Any other question? Okay, then we come to my last question. and just as a round to summarize that, if you have 1 million, each of you would have 1 million to invest in one market research trend, and can it be your own company? So, Pam,
darn it.
So, which trend would that be? And we start with you, Christian.
Oh, yeah, first. Yeah, wow, that's a tough one, Holger. That's
yeah,
really
I know, and I haven't said it before, one. So it's
yeah.
But you have it just 1 million, virtually spend it.
I was just saying that I probably would try to bring a bit more these kind of different or try quality control would be the one, right? Because sometimes you don't know. There's a lot of trust. Right, so you trust the data, you trust what's coming on, and that's something which I would do. And at the same time, I would probably invest it in bring different data sources together. I think that's an even better
one.
To merge data sets, because surveys and qualitative and think yes, they are good. That's our profession, or most of it. But there are so many different other ways to collect the data, which are even more valuable to answer certain questions. So, could be clickstream data, big data, could be anything. And if we find a clever way to say, no, we want to include those and we want to triangle and everything, I think that's an even higher value to our end clients.
Okay, cool. Stefan, I head over to you.
1 million.
1 million. Yeah, it's not much money for something that works for YouGov.
Yeah. I think about it. I have so many ideas in my mind when it comes to that, but I trust you. You know, if you have the same idea or you copy my idea, we can cooperate. For sure, what I would like to have is something like a digital consumer brain, right? So there are approaches, which are working on that, but we need maybe 2 years more on top on that. Mm-hmm. But that's my idea, to collect data from the internet, blah, 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 and then we create something like a digital consumer brain, right? So I've seen something like...
What would that mean?
It's, for example, when I use now a tool like Neuroflash, right? Okay. So I'm curious about what people are thinking about when it comes to lunch at work, right? So I have two solutions. I can qualitative interview people. It costs much time and money, of course. Or I use Neuroflash, the AI Explorer, to put it into and then provide me with the association people do have. And I can create something like a digital consumer brain. It's incredible. I've used it a couple of times. But there must be a couple of next steps on top, right? So I would invest this kind of money there. And the other one I would like to invest in more automated tools, right? So I think Frank Buchler is not here today. So he has now developed a tool for pricing. Mm-hmm. And it's quite easy. You upload your product, you define the points, you interview the people, and you get a real dashboard with an optimal revenue, for example. So there, as a researcher, you don't can do that many kind of mistakes, right? So, and that's another way I would like to put my million into, right?
Okay.
Thinking about three or four different things here. I think probably a million, if it would go far enough, would be, I think, to create more of a community, app-based community. So I think there's the gamification bit, but already investing in that. I think it would be more around, rather than just communicating back to premise and the end customer, communicating between themselves. So actually people wanting to find out information that they will find handy. So what's the price of this product there, and actually starting to trade information between themselves. Ultimately, I suppose it's to increase the engagement, but to make the user experience more interesting. And this maybe go back to the point around why would younger people be more involved? I don't think we're going to develop another social media, but
yeah, it seems it's making it more
sociable and trading of information that I think we'll invest in.
Okay. So something like a Facebook for younger people, obviously.
Because it's an older demographic than Facebook,
I think I would try to create something that would be able to reach, I would say the unreachable, but you know, we do reach a lot of, in our experience, a lot of hard-to-reach patients, but there's a whole other segment of people who don't know what research is. We go to these events all the time, and they'll say, oh, what do you do? And we'll explain what research is, and oh, you can do this, and participate, and share your voice. And they're constantly like deer in the headlights. They don't know that they're important and they don't know that someone wants to hear from them. Like, as researchers, we all think everyone knows what's a focus group or what's an interview or a survey, but a lot of people don't know that, you know, that their input is needed and required. And so we're connecting with this tiny little group who wants to be involved and wants to share, but there are enormous numbers of people out there who don't even know you want to hear from them. So I think I would try to create something that connected with the disconnected, the people who don't know what research is.
It's a nice idea. Yeah, very nice. So thank you very much on the panel for taking part and giving your expert voice. And thank you very much for participating. And I wish you... I wish you all a nice lunch break. See you.